You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
So let's get someone more informed than we are to talk about this story. ABC News, ESPN, not exactly the way that we thought we'd be covering Super Bowl week. No guests this week. We haven't done anything Radio Row related. The pandemic is going on. It doesn't feel at all like football. And Stugatz and I just were talking about a retired football player and how sad and hard it is to retire from football. So we segue seamlessly from that particular darkness to this darkness, which is clinicians are seeing a racial inequity, an inequality in the NFL concussion payouts as part of this $800 million settlement. So Dr. Daniel Cantor, he's a neurologist. He's a specialist in Coconut Creek, Florida. He's joining us now. Daniel, you are, explain to me what your link is to Najee Davenport. Do you have a link to Kevin Henry?
No.
So what is the link to Najee Davenport, and how is it that you're involved with this particular headline?
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Daniel Cantor. I'm the president emeritus of the Florida Society of Neurology. I am the chair of the subcommittee on concussion for Florida High School Athletic Association. And I just finished my term as vice chair of the American Academy of Neurology Sports Neurology section. So one of the things I specialize in is brain injury and concussion. And there's a settlement that was in the news a lot many years ago, which is between the NFL and players who suffered concussions while playing football in the league. And so as part of that, I was for a while, not anymore, but I was what they call a MAF. So I think it actually stands for Monetary Award Fund Qualified Physician, which means that when somebody is in the NFL and they're retired, they can go either to a math doctor who's supposed to be more independent, or they go to a doctor who's much less independent, who's basically hired by the settlement to figure out whether they deserve a payout or not payout.
And so as it relates specifically to your involvement with this, Najee Davenport's decision to do this, Najee Davenport is claiming to ABC News that there is racial bias in how it is that these payments are given out. Can you speak to that? And what kind of arguments can you make on behalf of that?
Racism is defined as being prejudice based on the color of one's skin. Agreement made by the NFL is racist. It's simple as that. Basically, what it says is that we didn't test people 30 years ago before they started playing. So we're testing them after they're retired from playing and they are having thinking problems. So then you have to say, well, how do you know if somebody had a good IQ or not a good IQ? So the way you normally do that is you look at, you know, their socioeconomic background, where they went to school, how well they did in school, and you play all these things together. In the case of the NFL settlement, what they're saying is the deciding factor is whether you're black or whether you're white. And if you're black, they're saying you're scoring lower, not because of the concussions, you're scoring lower because you started out scoring lower. That is the definition of racism.
So what do you say when someone says, well, a settlement was agreed to by all parties on this? It was already agreed to. It was $800 million. Why should this be outside of the auspices of that agreement?
Firstly, I'm not sure the settlement was agreed to in a manner that was fair to the people that were agreeing to. What I mean by that is when you normally go for a lawsuit, you have a lawyer and you're of sound mind, you can make a decision. we're taking people who were saying have thinking problems, and their only representation was lawyers. They didn't have another guardian to make decisions of whether this made sense or not. There's no way that an NFL player should be expected to go through the thousands of pages of the settlement and say, oh, wait, that doesn't make sense. You're using a norm from the 1980s from San Francisco, from black people there, and you're trying to apply that to me here nowadays in the year 2020, 2021. That's not fair to expect that of people. So the agreement was set up in a way that was unfair to people of color.
And the agreement is agreed to, though, correct? Like legally, you're not a lawyer, but
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer.
But legally, I just don't understand how can you end up winning something like this if that agreement is in place legally?
So how they're going to win this? I'm not sure. And that's a question for the lawyers. What they could say, I guess, is to say that the agreement never met the muster, never really passed the test of not being a racist agreement. And it was unfair from the beginning. And so that part of the agreement should be played back. I mean, that's not the only aspect of this agreement that doesn't make sense to me as a doctor. What I specialize in is the nervous system. Specialize in the brain, the spinal cord, the peripheral nerves. We don't have a diagnosis called neurocognitive impairment level 1.5 or level 2. Yet we are expected to make those diagnoses to help the players meet the criteria. So the criteria are these legalese criteria that don't have anything to do with what we do in regular practice.
Can you explain to the audience just how difficult it is sometimes to collect on these settlements? Do you have firsthand working knowledge of that?
I have firsthand knowledge of that. I'll tell you, when I started doing this, at first I thought, probably like most of your listeners, I thought, well, these are NFL players. They're wealthy. What are they complaining about? They knew there were problems with hitting their heads. Well, that's firstly not true. So until about the 80s, 90s is when you started to see people start to make more money, and then you start seeing crazy payments that people were getting, right? So NFL players, we know, make a lot more money than the rest of us. But that wasn't the case in the 70s, in the 80s, even I think maybe in the early 90s. I had one player who told me that his sister was a nurse. She was making more money than he was playing football in the NFL. And so there's first that idea of bias, right? So we come to this, I think all of us in the public, we just assume, oh, NFL players, they're well off. It's not a problem. We also think, well, it's obvious nowadays that hitting your head is a bad idea. We say that now, but that wasn't obvious when these players were out there. It wasn't that repeated hitting your head and being forced to go back into play was a bad idea. And so now that we know that, it's a whole different ballpark. So it should be an easier process. A process where you go with your claim, there's a board, they sign the board, and boom, you get payouts. That is not the case. It has not been easy for these players. There are very few players relative to the amount of players who play in the NFL who've actually had payouts. And as physicians, we're being told, we get back rejections about the people that we've seen saying, well, they didn't meet this criteria or that criteria. And it just seems like every time they're adding on just another barrier to people actually getting the care they deserve.
What are the medical specifics we need to know about Najee Davenport?
I think the medical specifics are that Najee played in the NFL. Najee has cognitive problems, so thinking problems, because of repeated head injury. And that's not being recognized by the NFL because they're saying, no, he's scoring low, not because it got hit in the head. He's scoring low because he's black. That's what people need to know.
Hasn't he also, though, when I think of Najee Davenport, somebody I have known since high school here in Miami, I remember there were reports about him testing poorly. And this happened to a lot of Miami guys where they went to UM and got an education and got smarter at the University of Miami and became professionals and grew into adults, but didn't necessarily test well. And I remember Najee having around him some sort of, scouting combine testing shame. I don't think I have that wrong. But so what would you say to the person who's saying, well, no, that's not based on his being black and it's not being based on a lower measure of cognitive ability. It's being based on the fact that Najee Davenport has been somebody that has tested poorly for a long time. And that's why the NFL is going to say either that or we don't have anything to do with what the clinicians and what the testing procedures were. We were outside of it and we were farming that out. That's going to be the arguments against this, is it not?
Well, I don't think they were outside of it. I wasn't involved with the settlement. I wasn't involved as a neurology expert at the time, but the NFL was, to my understanding, intimately involved. I mean, they were the parties, they were the other party to the settlement. And so they have medical experts, they have chief medical officers, they have a lot at their disposal. So I'm not sure that the NFL can, you know, pick their hands aside and say that they didn't know what was going on.
Well, this is coming from an NFL spokesperson. The NFL parties play no role in the independent clinicians' examinations, and any resulting diagnoses are reviewed by a neutral court-appointed claims administrator. Challenges to diagnoses are reviewed by neutral court-appointed special masters and ultimately the court itself. Isn't that what that spokesman is trying to argue?
They may be trying to argue it, but that's not the case. So what happens is when you see a player, people with all kinds of neurological problems, but when somebody comes from the NFL, a retired player, what happens is there's the evaluation that I make as a neurologist plus the evaluation that a neuropsychologist meets. To make sure everyone understands, a neuropsychologist is not a neurologist. They are usually a PhD, sometimes a PsyD, but they're a PhD psychologist who then subspecialized in neuropsychology. And so that means they don't prescribe medications, they don't do surgery. What they do is they do basically cognitive testing. So those are those long 6-hour testing you go in for, and they come up and they tell you what parts, you know, are you having problems with the way you're thinking, with your memory, with your speech, with your language, what exactly is going on. And so when we, as the independent people, make our determinations, neurologist saying something and you have a neuropsychologist saying something, we're board certified, we're signing our name at the risk of perjury, we're saying what we believe. Then what happens is the claims administrator, they have a committee that looks at this and says, oh, wait a second, there's this little T that you didn't cross. There's this little I that the person didn't meet. There's this rust. They will pick apart and find reasons to not pay out. But that committee is basing its decisions on the agreement made in the settlement. And the agreement made in the settlement, they're saying, well, shouldn't have forced racial norms. Well, if it didn't, then why is this committee saying that the NFL is telling them to do it? So they can't have it both ways. They can't say we have nothing to do with it and we have everything to do with it.
What is the
question? If they want to have nothing to do with it, we invite them to have a truly independent and allow physicians and neuropsychologists to make this determination, not some committee set up where you have payouts, where lawyers are making lots of money.
What is the question I should be asking you that I'm not asking you?
The question that can come up is to say, well, isn't it fair to rate people based on their race? We rate people, we say that a 30-year-old might be different than a 50-year-old, might be different than a 60-year-old. So is someone who's white going to be someone different than someone who's black? And the answer to that is race is a small part of it. Race is probably a marker for other things. I would submit to you that an NFL player who's white has more in common with an NFL player who's black than that white player has with me just because of the color of my skin. And so basing it on the race alone is unfair. It's racist. It's like we're living in this time now, in this moment of history where we're talking about racism and people are finding ways to find systemic racism where it doesn't exist. Here we have a clear example of racism and we should be calling them out.
Doc, here's the pressing question. Your information has been great, but the most important question is, what's the single most important thing the Bucs have to do to beat the Chiefs?
You're doing it wrong.
Chiefs. Doc?
It's a fair question.
I know it is.
I don't actually, I watch sports, but I do not get into I do not get into, well, it's like partisan politics, right? I don't get into
Democratic. You don't have
politics.
An opinion. All right. You don't want to have any. All right. You don't want to have any controversial opinions around here. We understand, Doc. Thank you for being on with us. God forbid you should have a controversial opinion of the single most important thing that the Bucs have to do to beat the Chiefs. Thank you. You're so bad at it. I don't understand. Thank you.
Chiefs is a tough one.
Thank you for the information, Doctor. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
One of the recurring tensions that we have around the show here is that Stugatz doesn't want to do what we were just doing right now. I feel like him and Billy both checked out on that interview, didn't understand why we weren't doing jazz hands, why we weren't running around here marching band, why we weren't celebrating Super Bowl week and breaking down the matchups between the Bucks and the Chiefs.
No. It wasn't checked out. It's that I got lost. Like if I'm driving somewhere and I don't show up there because I got lost in the woods, I didn't check out on getting there. I just, you know, I couldn't figure out the direction. So we were going, and then when we were by like the fourth neuropsychologist, neuro this, neuro that,
he
I was like,
he really gave his bona fides right off the top, man. He wasn't messing around.
Awesome. No, he had to establish his credibility. It was a good job by him. And then he's smarter than all of us, which goes without saying.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I mean, okay, congratulations, Doc. You're smarter than all of us.
But Billy and I, we didn't check out. Billy's right. We were lost. And when you're lost, you desperately try to find your way back to where it is that you were. Mm-hmm. And we just couldn't find our way back.
It was a maze.
That's all. Yeah.
It was a maze. We were trying to backtrack to where we were before, and then everybody was gone. We were somewhere else. We're just trying to go down the maze, figure it out.
So it's not that you were bored. It's not that you thought
we're
it was
dumb.
An awkward guest. It's not that you wanted hijinks and radio panache. It was basically just that. That's what you're saying. Did I say panache wrong again? Panache? What's it called?
I've always
said panache because I didn't know. I said that one time on Pardon the Interruption like 20
That's
years ago,
wrong.
And they still mock me about it.
Panache?
Yes, because I thought it was a French word, and I have the habit of making everything a little Spanish.
It's panache, is it not?
I've always heard panache.
All right.
Panache. Sounds delicious.
Panache.
Mike, do you have any thoughts on this concussion story? Because this is not the way to cover Super Bowl week. We have not done Super Bowl-related things. We have not had a lot of fun with the Super Bowl. We feel very far outside of the Super Bowl. It's a weird Super Bowl anyway because everyone's doing it by Zoom.
I do. I have thoughts on it, and it's super complicated, and you have to navigate it carefully because of the subject matter, I am fascinated. And the racial layers to this go beyond just what they did in the NFL. What kind of treatment for their trauma did they receive in high school? Is that broken down by race? Because I'm with you. I heard like Najee Davenport in college had some behavior that made you go, huh? And then years later, when you find out about concussions, you're like, well, that makes a little bit more sense. He was a very physical running back, did a lot of blocking for the University of Miami. When he was called into action at running back, he was good at that. He had a decent career in the NFL.
Mike, I only think of you really talked around that one well, because when I think of the name Najee Davenport, and in Pittsburgh, he was known as the dump truck. But when I do word association on Najee Davenport, and this isn't fair to Najee, but it's what I do, it's pooped in a closet.
Yeah, pooped in a closet.
It's pooped in a closet is what I remember.
And I remember having a lot of fun with that story 12 years ago or so. And now, especially in light of this lawsuit.
He was a battering ram.
Yeah, in light of this lawsuit, that was my first thought when I saw Najee's. I mean, it's always my first thought whenever I see Najee's name. Like you, for me, it's word association, but now I'm looking at it in a different light.
I was just sent a picture of the saddest radio row I've ever seen in my entire life.
Mike, Stugatz is not listening to the show today.
He got lost again. I was trying to find my way back, and what I found was a picture of Radio Row.
I'm surprised you didn't do that as a pirate. Mike Ryan is offering you. Do you not hear the tone as he discusses serious, somber subject matter as he reflects on whether 12 years ago it was wrong to laugh at the idea, I'm not even going to be able to say it, of taking a poop in a closet. Like, I feel like I'm going to laugh for the rest of my life, no matter what the circumstances are, even if it's the good friend of John Kitna, Tom Hanks, taking a dump in a closet, because
Kitna would never.
He eats babies as part of QAnon.
Stugatz, I actually had a conversation with someone yesterday about Radio Row, and I'm like, what's the point of even being there? They're not bringing anyone there. You're sitting on a table just doing Zooms. Why even go through all of this and risk any of the dangers of it?
I can't believe what I'm saying. There is one show at Radio Row. There are tables set up. There are chairs around, but only one show showed up to Radio Row. It's incredible.
All right, Stugatz has placed in the chat what he believes to be the set. All right, so this is Radio Row. It is. Okay, I am now seeing it. I want you to imagine. I am seeing this photo, and this is the photo, okay? I want you to imagine a totally hollowed out BJ's warehouse or Costco. Totally hollowed out. Okay, there's nothing there. There are no shelves. There's no food. And about, let's say, 20 tables you would find in a banquet hall. 20 tables, all of them separated by about a football field. So do I have this about right? Are there any more descriptions? Chris Cody is writing in the chat that there's a lot of room for activities. There's a lot of room for people. What there aren't is people. That's what they're not bringing anyone through there. It's just the saddest thing I've ever seen. I think Kevin Rogers is there.
I want these guys on our show. I do. I want to get them on.
Oh, yes, we got to do that.
We got to get them on just to paint the picture.
All right. All right. Who are these guys? It is a lot of white people. Wait a minute. Is that the back of J.J. Watt? Who is that the back of? There is the back of somebody that is larger than all the other backs there, Stugatz. It's a lot of white people being interviewed or sitting at a table talking to a person with an expansive back.
I don't know whose back that is. It could be J.J. If I had to guess, it's a good guess by you, J.J.
Not
Watt.
Terrible. Yeah. Not a terrible guess, just based off looking this guy from behind.
But J.J. Watt just sent out a tweet of him and his dogs playing in the snow, so I don't think he'd be J.J. in Tampa. It's not snowing in Tampa.
All right, so this is as close as we get to Super Bowl week right here. A Costco warehouse shelled out and left with only 20 tables and perhaps the back of J.J. Watt.
So sad. Last year, that hollowed out Costco was a Tootsie's.
Miami was so good. This banquet hall, it feels a little convention center-y, but on top of everything else, you know what this feels, guys? And I'm going to have the word for you, and you guys are all going to recognize it as soon as I say it. What it feels more than anything is Tampa. It feels like Tampa, a little bit damp, moist, maybe smells like the bad parts of the beach over 40 years of Tampa. Your grandparents and what they did in Tampa when they were younger, the dirty things they did in Tampa when it was a vacation town. That carpet is from the 80s, right? This is what's happening here. This is an amphitheater of sadness. And it's just one table filled with people.
We should have went this year.
And we should have gone. And because each of the tables is 100 yards apart. And I've got to be honest, I missed the Super Bowl. I can't deny it. Do you realize what a lame Super Bowl week this was? You cannot dispute that over 10 years, some of our best work was made just making fun of what this week is. But now we've been excluded from it entirely, and we were just talking to a doctor from Coconut Creek. That's not near the Super Bowl. Now, I don't want to be particularly close to the old carpets in Tampa.
Although, geographically, he's pretty close to the Super Bowl. I mean, the dock in Coconut Creek, is he not?
Is it too late to go, Billy? Can we go?
Yeah, I want to go. I would dominate that room.
There's no one in that room.
What do you mean you would dominate that room?
I don't know.
There's no one in the room, of course. What are those banners hanging from the ceiling? What is that? Are those decorations for the media, the assembled media that's not there?
That's one per Super Bowl, yeah. It's tradition, Dan, Radio Row.
Yeah.
I'm trying to track down someone that's there.
Sanners.
That has to be WDAE, right? It has to be the Tampa local station. Like, there's no one that's approving any of their hosts flying to Tampa to host from Radio Row, right? Like, no one.
I don't understand how it is that we're doing this Super Bowl. We're doing the Super Bowl media. What, you guys help me, because I didn't watch any of what Media Day was on SportsCenter, but it's usually, you know, some guy dressed as a bumblebee is making his way through the crowd and somebody's asking the dumb question. And then there's this kid, this, you know, 8-year-old kid who's a whiz kid broadcaster doomed to a future of a bad life because he was famous at 8, who asking cute questions. Oh, no, wait a minute. That actually happened. That guy's got a more successful interview show than I have. What is that name? His name is Graham. Is it Bissinger? What's that kid's name?
Oh, God, now you're calling me out.
I'm sorry. I thought Graham. For sure somebody. Bensinger?
Yeah, Bensinger. Graham Bensinger.
That kid was a child prodigy at one of these things. What was radio, not Radio Row, what was Media Day like this year, Stugatz? Did you follow any of what was happening on SportsCenter?
No.
On whatever the Tuesday day is when everyone gets together and just sort of the sniffs around Tom Brady and asks him his favorite kind of cheesecake?
I didn't check it out this year. It's just it's a weird detachment we have, I think all of us have, from this Super Bowl, except for this one show in Tampa. I mean, they are there covering this thing. I think I know who it is, Dan.
We can't have, I don't care whether you know who it is or not. Just get them on the show or don't get them on the show. You're just going to keep saying, I think I know who it is.
I found someone that's there. I'm going to reach out.
Oh, yeah, you found it. The Pat and Aaron show, I believe it is. I believe it's Aaron. I think it's Aaron Taylor, perhaps, is part of that show.
Lincoln Kennedy, what's up, man?
I was going to ask you for the whole thing.
Dude, I was looking for like the whole thing, and now all I have is club. I think I lost maybe a couple of older files here. I can't find the original one, but I have like little bite-sized pieces.
All right, so once upon a time, was this the first Super Bowl that we did in Miami in like 2011?
This was the Detroit Super Bowl. K-Raj was in Detroit.
Yeah. Are you sure this wasn't Jacksonville?
This was Detroit. The first one you guys did was Jacksonville, I believe. This one came after that. This was the Steelers Seahawks.
All right. For those of you who do not know, Kevin Rogers was an up and coming prodigy talent out of Kansas City. He was going to be Nick Wright before Nick Wright. Nick Wright, you'll hear him on South Beach Sessions like you've never heard him before. K-Raj was up and coming. He was an up and coming 90-year-old man. He's the oldest person to ever be young. It's hard to explain just how old Kevin Rogers was at 21 years old. But he was a titan in this industry, and in this industry he sat on Radio Row, and it was a nighttime show in Kansas City. I believe he wasn't yet with us in Miami.
This was on 790 The Ticket.
Okay, it was on 790 The Ticket. Okay, forgive me. Regardless, I didn't know whether
he was already here. It was in Detroit. K-Raj was working for us. He had moved from Kansas City to South Florida.
Lot of cities, lot of places, lot of times.
K-Raj first met us at the Jacksonville Super Bowl. Well, the first one we went to, he followed me around until I gave him a job.
He was in Kansas City back then. Yes.
You ran right to the baseline and trapped yourself.
Yes,
there.
I really did. I really did.
Timeline business.
Yes.
Why couldn't you just say, man, this was long ago and Kevin
I was
Rogers.
Filibustering for you to find all the K-Raj sound.
Oh,
that you
I
need.
Took the 20 minutes necessary. I have quick ones.
Oh my God, Ray Lewis is here. Can we get Ray Lewis on the show before my tongue falls off? Hey Ray, you got a couple minutes? Ray, let's see. Whatever. Oh my God, Ray Lewis is here. Can we get Ray Lewis on the show before my tongue falls off?
Never never gets old.
It was just him. I want you to picture the amphitheater we're talking about right now. Because once you got to nighttime on Radio Row, it was basically just K-Raj and, you know, Nasty Nestor from Baltimore. It's just a couple of sad people who get perked up and excited when anyone famous walks into the room.
But Ray Lewis walking in after hours.
No, but the part that I want the audience to sort of enjoy is that K-Raj, this was very much a solo show, and K-Raj was just sort of talking to himself, like bored, whether there was a microphone or not there. He was just talking the way that somebody sitting in an amphitheater, empty and sad, would talk if Lincoln Kennedy walked by.
Lincoln Kennedy, what's up, man?
I wish I had the rest of that, because he's like, you're going to FHM tonight?
Where you going tonight?
You're going to the FHM party tonight.
FHM. I'll see you later.
It's exactly how it happened. I will see you later, said K-Raj. Now, this is what I would like for you to do, okay, as a Google search. This is what I want you to do. I want you right now, I want to slow this down, and I want the audience to enjoy this. I want you to Google image search Lincoln Kennedy, and then I want you to Google image search Kevin Rogers.
It's a pretty common name.
And I want you, Kevin Rogers, 790 the ticket, and I want you to imagine them walking into an FHM party together. I want you to imagine K-Raj catching up later with Lincoln Kennedy and his crew at the FHM party.
Oh, guys, I found it. I'll
see you there.
Here we go.
I found the file called Best of K-Raj.
Yes. Wait a
within
second.
That.
Yes. You have the full clip
yes,
here?
You got the full clip. Empty the full clip on him.
Let's hear that.
Lincoln Kennedy, what's up, man? Yeah, I'm working. Where you go? You on the FHM party tonight? You going to FHM tonight? All right. I'll see you later.
No.
Everyone's left. Go home.
I want you to hear Lincoln Kennedy shout at a sad, lonely Kevin Rogers in an echoing amphitheater. Go home. There's no one left here.
Lincoln Kennedy, what's up, man? Yeah, I'm working. Where you go? You on the FHM party tonight? You going to FHM tonight? All right. I'll see you later.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.